I'm Tom Wilmer. We're here in Mobile, Alabama. Right now we're with John Serta, the founder and owner of Serta's Coffee Company in the heart of downtown Mobile. Hi, John. When did you start Serta's Coffee House downtown?
I started in February of 2008, the day after Mardi Gras.
And business-wise, 2008, we had an economic downturn starting then, so...
Figured if I survived 08, then I could probably survive most anything.
What do you specialize in here? It's more than just coffee.
We do a little bit of everything here. You know, we've got coffee, we've got all fruit smoothies, we do 24 flavors of gelato ice cream. We've got a great menu of wraps and sandwiches and soups and salads. And we also we have a full bar where we do a lot of craft beers. We got about 30 bottles and cans of craft beers, a good selection of wine, and a full liquor bar.
Your philosophy of roasting coffee and sourcing coffee.
I believe in roasting each coffee to its optimal flavor. You know, a lot of people are, this trend right now is really, really, really light roast coffee that tastes like grass and peanut butter to me because the coffee's too lightly roasted. Where a few years ago it was over roasted. Everything was just dark roasted. I think that you should take that bean and you should roast it to get the most optimal flavors out of it. And if it's a light roast, it's a light roast. If it's a dark roast, it's a dark roast. Most of them pop to me at a fairly medium roast, and I think that provides the best cup for that coffee.
Talk about sourcing your beans. For example, you just went down to Costa Rica not too long ago and visited and were right there in the fields.
I did. I got very lucky, and I was able to go to source again. When I got started in 08, I got started because I was lucky enough to tour some farms while I lived in Costa Rica, and that's where my passion developed because most people don't realize the amount of labor, how much it takes to get that cherry bean off that coffee and put it on a ship and ship it to the United States. And it doesn't stop from there. Then, you know, it ships from a port in the United States to somewhere within the United States, and then it lands in somebody's coffee shop. And then, you know, they can do what they want with it. And that whole chain of events can take anywhere from, you know, 2 months to 6 months just to get that bean of coffee. And being able to meet the farmers, you just really see the pride and the dedication of the work that it takes to just grow a really high quality cup of coffee.
Let's talk about organic by default.
Most farmers that I've run into are too poor to buy insecticide. So the best way to do it is just to grow it organically, and they don't have a choice in that matter. Problem is that they can't sell it organic because they don't even have the money to get the organic certification. So, but most of the coffee that I've run into is pretty much organic.
By default.
Yeah. And now I was telling you earlier, some of their processing methods are a lot of environmentally friendly now because they're not using as much water anymore. They're using a process called honey processing.
And tell us how that started. That's interesting.
There was an earthquake in 03 or 04, and I can't remember which year it was, in Costa Rica, and that damaged a lot of the water that supplied these farms where they would use the water process to process the mucilage off the beans. So since they didn't have water, they had to come up with a new way to process their coffees. And what they did is they just laid out the coffee and let it ferment, let the mucilage ferment off the beans. They called it a honey process because it was a sticky white or red, depending on how long they let it ferment.
Is this a method that's limited to Costa Rica out of necessity, or is it growing and people are trying it around the world?
Actually, I have not seen it in other countries right now. The most coffees we buy that are honey processed come from Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. I don't see why they couldn't use it. And I don't know for sure if other countries are not using it. I just know that the ones that are using it is Costa Rica.
Beyond Costa Rica, what are some of your favorite beans and where do you source them?
I love Kenyan coffees right now. I'm not sure what's going on in Kenya right now, but every single coffee I've had from has just been fantastic. I love the fruitiness of them. I like the brightness of these coffees. They're very clean. They have a great mouthfeel. The body is really nice, and the aftertaste is just extremely pleasant. So we've gotten some really amazing beans from Africa, you know, specifically Kenya, and a few from Ethiopia. That has just been remarkable.
Let's talk about Mobile and its kind of economic growth and why it spurred you to stick your neck out on another venture that's happening right now.
Well, I'm from Mobile. I'm a Mobile kid, and I always had jobs working downtown Mobile. My first job was a runner when I was 19 years old, or 18 or 19, right around the block here. So I've just always had a love for downtown Mobile. It's a great community here. Everybody looks out for one another, and you get to know all your neighbors, which I really, really like. So when I graduated college and came back to Mobile, I decided the first place I want to open is downtown Mobile. At the time, it was not a great time. It was 2008. Mobile wasn't the greatest place for a downtown community, but I stuck my neck out because I believed, you know, there was a lot of good things that was Mobile's capable of. Everybody calls this town the town of perpetual potential because, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And 10 years later, it didn't happen. 20 years later, it didn't happen. But right now, I think we're going to be the town of potential realized because it seems like we're turning. Things are really going good here. We just landed a $150 million Walmart distribution center. We just got a big French manufacturing Airbus here. You know, we've got ThyssenKrupp, which is now, Amapau or something like that. Another company bought ThyssenKrupp that's Finnish, a Finnish company. And then we have Austal, which is an Australian manufacturer of destroyers. So things are turning around in Mobile.
All along, this has been a pretty phenomenal shipping port of entry and export.
It really is. When I built this place in 08, I had it bonded by Terminix. And the guy was working for Terminix for 20-something years, and he said, you know, you'd be amazed, but the Formosa termite was introduced in the port of Mobile. And the largest termite colony ever found was right across the street in the Van Antwerp building. So Mobile is known for some really unique things.
Well, at least among the termite inspectors.
Right. So I don't know if, you know, he was blowing smoke up my butt, but it was a good story. And I also heard that the rat ants were introduced through the port of Mobile.
They were riding with the bananas coming in, from what I understand.
So that's true. You heard that too?
Yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
I didn't know if that was true or not either. So apparently,
they said a lot of people are mad at Mobile right now.
Yeah, well, if you've ever stepped in a fire ant bed, you can thank Mobile, Alabama for that.
Well, back to the positive and progression. You're in the process of creating and opening a brew pub, right?
Well, it's not a brew pub.
A brewery, yeah. So there would not be on-site sale then?
No, actually in Alabama you can't allow on-site sale of beer now.
Well, you can.
You can.
So this is new.
Well, we just passed what's called the Growler Bill. And that allows us to sell packaged beer to go. Mm-hmm. We could always sell draft beer in pints, which was nice. But the Growler Bill now allows us to sell beer to go in packaged goods like cans or bottles, up to a case per person.
Nice. So when do you think your brewery is going to open, and what's the name?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. We've been working on it for 3.5 years, and we really believe that now July 4th is going to be our opening date, and it's, of course, called Serta Brewing. Mm-hmm. So we're piggybacking on the 8 years of branding that we have in the coffee business in the town, so we're going to be calling it Serta Brewing.
And so distribution will obviously be local, but yet out of the area, how far away do you want to go?
Just starting off, we're just going to go to the county right next door in Baldwin County in Alabama. One of the worst things you can do is overextend yourself and not be able to satisfy the market. When you look at tap handles are valuable real estate in the beer market, and it's very hard to get that real estate. And if you are lucky enough to get that real estate...
What's a tap handle?
Tap handle is that beautiful device that they used to pull and to pour beer into the pint, and they call them tap handles.
So what do you mean to get one?
Well, you know, you got to beat off Abita and Budweiser and Bud Light and Miller and all these big companies.
We just come into the middle of the night.
Well, yeah, and, you know, bribe a few people, you know. I mean, they don't care about that in the United States. It's a little, it's called grease money is what I learned in college. But, yeah, those are very valuable real estate. So if you get one and then you run out of beer, well, then that salesperson has to go back and try to get it again, and then that salesperson's mad at you, so he's not going to push your beer. So you want to make sure that you have enough supply.
So you want to go slowly.
We want to go slow. We want to build into the market.
in parallel, you would be in grocery stores throughout Alabama?
We would, not right off starting off. Our plan of attack right now is to really take care of our backyard, the brewery first. Then we're going to go into what's called on-premise sales, which is all the draft accounts in restaurants. And then once we get comfortable with that market and also fine-tune our bottling line, because bottling lines are very, very picky machines, we'll start bottling and then go into retail establishments like grocery stores and convenience stores. So that's our plan of attack.
Let's talk about, for a moment, the three-tier system within the world of beers.
Three-tier system. It's God in Alabama, if you ask anybody in the liquor business. And the three-tier system is just, you've got the manufacturer, you got the distributor, and then you have the retailer. And they make sure that those three tiers are separate, and they do a very good job at that. Why they do that, I'm not really sure. And they probably can't tell me either, but they like it, and they're going to keep it that way for a while. What I find really interesting about Mobile right now is I was just talking to my friend, his name's Pete Blom. He owns Panini Pete's. He's becoming a pretty popular chef in our area. He's been on a guy, Fiery, mm-hmm. How do you say his last name, Fiery?
I think you're ahead of me.
So we were just talking, you know, 5, maybe 6, 7 years ago, it would be very difficult to name 10 places in Mobile that you can go get really good food. We love boxes in Alabama, and what I mean by boxes is chains, you know, TGI Fridays, Applebee's, Ruby Tuesdays. Yeah. So it was very difficult for a guy like me or Pete to come in and open up a mom and pop and succeed, because most people didn't support that. Now this trend in Mobile, Alabama, is actually changing quite a bit.
We've got rapidly.
And very rapidly, yeah. We've actually got more than one or two mom and pop dining options, and I find that really pleasant and surprising. I think you ate at one tonight, the Bluegill on the mm-hmm. Causeway. Yeah. You know, that's a local restaurant. They do a hell of a job. They've got a great music venue back on their porch. You can't beat the view, you know, so they do a really good job. Right up the street from us, you know, we have Noble South, Dumb Waiter, SciShow, Noja's, these restaurants that are just doing a phenomenal job.
These are all relatively new.
They are, in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. So it's a really dynamic, exploding scene.
It's a renaissance, you know, and Mobile has always struggled, especially downtown. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, you can't have people unless you have restaurants and things to do, and you can't have restaurants and things to do unless you have people. So you got crazy people like me that come down without any people and say, okay, I'm here, folks, come on down, mm-hmm. you know, and now it's finally getting this momentum where other people are seeing, okay, well, let's go downtown. And it's drawing more and more people. So.
And again, it probably starting the ball rolling with somebody like you being foolish enough to take that step when nobody else was.
Yeah, my father calls it too stupid to fail. So I think, or just lucky, you know, like I told you, I opened the day after Mardi Gras. Actually, I opened the day before Mardi Gras, and I got my butt handed to me for about 2 hours. And you try to think of everything when you open a business, you know, to make sure that you got everything. And I remember this guy coming up to me asking, hey, where's the sugar? And I was like, oh, my God, I'm a coffee shop, and I didn't buy sugar. I had Sweet and Low, I had Splenda, I had Equal, but I didn't have sugar. So luckily there was a Winn-Dixie around the corner from me. And well, tell you what, that we used to call it the Crack Dixie, because it used to be such a terrible place. It was just, you know, our whole downtown was just a ghetto, and we called it the Crack Dixie. So I ran up there, and I got some sugar, and I came back. Now we call it the Mac Dixie, because they put in, you know, $2, $3 million, and it was one of their prototype Winn-Dixie stores. Because, you know, they see the things that are happening in downtown Mobile.
That's incredible. You're talking about a story that's way less than 10 years of a major transformation.
It is. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen in 5 years, you know. We've got a hell of an administration right now. The mayor's very, very pro-Mobile. He wants to build the safest, family-friendly city, business-friendly city, and that's his goal, and it's his mantra, and he's so far done a really good job with it. The only thing we need now, and they're working on it now, they've got a trip to Washington, D.C., is to build the I-10 bridge over this tunnel. That's one thing that, you know, really gives Mobile kind of a blemish, because people from Louisiana, the first thing they see is this traffic jam when they come to Mobile, so they probably curse Mobile every time they go to the beach, because they've got to get this traffic jam as they go into the George Wallace Tunnel. So hopefully soon, you know, we'll be able to have a nice bridge over our river. And then the mayor and everybody else wants to put a bike lane next to it, which I think would be amazing to have this really nice bike lane, you know, on a bridge.
That's really cool. John Serta, what a pleasure to meet you and visit with you.
You too, Tom. I really appreciate you coming to Mobile and visiting our little city here by the water.
It's been a pleasant surprise. It really has.
Really? Yeah. I'm always amazed. Yeah.
Well, you know the drill. I mean, you're up north somewhere, and where are you going? I'm going to Alabama.
Right.
And it's like, why? Exactly. And yet they don't understand, you know, and that makes it even more wonderful.
I know. They think, you know, we just got electricity the other day. So.
Well, yeah, you did, huh?
I know. I told you, we haven't our electricity hadn't turned off in 8 years.
That's okay.
Well, thanks, Tom. I really appreciate the time that you've given us here.
John Serta, it's been a pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from downtown Mobile, Alabama, where we've been speaking with John Serta, the founder of Serta's Coffee Company, right in the heart of downtown.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.